Hello and welcome to Pixelated Realms Gamescast, your guide through the digital landscape, untangling the mysteries of your favorite titles and discussing the latest and greatest in video game fun. I'm your host, Alex Salerno. Alongside me is my brother, Tyler. How is it going?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Good morning, afternoon, whatever time you are listening to it. I'm doing well. I had a solid week. Been a little bit busy, so I haven't been exactly exploring as many different games as usual, but we have plenty to talk about today. Still lots in our backlog to talk about. That's something Alex and I were chatting about. We're like, well, we've been talking about a lot of modern video games and what we're playing now, but we have hundreds of video games that we played in the past that we love and would love to chat about more. So I'm looking forward to some of that.
Yeah. I mean, I recently just bought a Super Nintendo, so like, definitely love retro games. And I think you're lying a little bit that you just told me you're playing like 6 Warhammer games. Like, you're not playing a diverse amount. Yeah, right.
I mean, yeah. So I mean, I've been switching between Warhammer. If you've been listening to us episodically, you know that. And forever in the histories of the Pixelated Realms, Tyler is going through a Warhammer 40,000 phase. But, you know, that gives me an interesting perspective as I've been kind of talking a little bit to the podcast about the different games that have come out in the 40,000 universe. And as I've said before, they're really diverse. And so, like, if you're into that lore and that universe, like, you have any game you can find. Like, if you want to first-person shooter, some people, like, there's a game for that. If you want a RTS, there's a game for that. If you want a 4X, there's a game for that. So it's, I've just been kind of hopping from one to another.
I am pretty stunned that, I mean, 40K is pretty popular, but it's not in the forefront of yeah. anything. It's not like when you say 40K, people aren't like, oh yeah, like, you know, I know what that is. I know everything about it. It's like, oh, it's like super nerds still.
It's super interesting you say that, because I've been feeling the same, where I'm like, first and foremost, like, I mean, obviously we've been doing some models and stuff, so this isn't just the video games. We have also been participating in the miniature tabletop war game as well. But that being said, like, how much money, like, and time you invest into this hobby, it's like, clearly, like, it's really interesting how the barrier to entry on this particular hobby and lore world and everything is even higher than I'm used to. And you and me, like, we get into the nerdiest things that exist. Like, mm-hmm. you know, so I always considered myself like the super nerd, and like, even Warhammer is a step up on that scale, just because it has a huge barrier to entry in general. But you're right. I find that, like, I feel like this whole entire, universe is kind of like underappreciated, but like, it has a dedicated fan base of people, and that's super effective, and it's obviously driven them to their success. Mm-hmm. But it's not World of Warcraft, it's not a League of Legends. Like, people, for the most part, like, your average person is probably not going to know what Warhammer 40,000 is.
It's like, if you go to anybody on the street, the chances are you'll find someone who knows, like, Dungeons and Dragons, right? They're like, even if they don't play it, they're like, I don't play Dungeons and Dragons, but I'm familiar with, like, the idea of it. I get that it's, like, this fantasy.
Well, that's that, like, nerdy game. Yeah,
yeah, it's that fantasy game that people can play, and it's definitely more, like, accepted now. But if you go to somebody and you're like, have you heard of Warhammer? They're going to be like, no. I don't know what that is. No. I mean, I feel like in nerd culture, a lot of people are aware of it, but not everybody. Yeah. They're like, okay, I've heard of it. I know it exists, but I don't know a lot about it. Unless you're into Warhammer and then you know everything about it. But it's like, I'm kind of surprised. And no, it's been around for what, since the 80s? And I feel like it's had a resurgence. I feel like in the last like 10, 15 years, it's probably had like a bit of a resurgence, kind of like Dungeons and Dragons. So maybe it'll have its time soon. But I was my first kind of exposure to Warhammer was actually through the games,
same here.
So, and then I had a few friends who did it, but I had never really, like, they had never shoved it down my throat or anything, so I didn't really, like, appreciate it. I just knew that they had a few of the models, and then I started playing some of the games. I think, like, Dark Tide a few years ago, I played that one, and I was like, okay, like, this is kind of neat. And then I kind of started exploring the lore a little bit more, and I was like, this is kind of wacky. Like, I kind of like this, you know, and like, I remember one of the first big lore drops that like kind of made me go like, whoa, this is there something special here was that when they yeah. was the fact that when they like hyperspace jump, they go through hell. Yeah. And that there was like a 30% chance that they all go crazy when they come out the other side yeah. or something like that. I mean, my numbers are off, but the idea is there, right? Like, and I was like, okay, there's some like really interesting, wacky stuff here. And I'm here for it. And now it's like, you know, you kind of got me into the minis. And then, and now I know you bought.
I would just keep going,
it just keeps
right?
going. Yeah, just you bought like every game. And I was like, okay, I've been playing Warhammer Chaos Gate, which is the XCOM like game, and then I just bought Rogue Trader because it was on sale, and you were telling me about it, and so that's like the kind of D&D RPG KOTAR kind of game.
Well, it's just funny because like it's let's talk about that a little bit because I if we can encourage some other people to pick up some Warhammer games, like I think that'd be a positive. So mm-hmm. I think my first introduction probably was Warhammer, was the Vermintide series. So if you guys remember, Vermintide was a squad-based Left 4 Dead style kind of very similar to Darktide. It's a spiritual successor to it's the prequel to Darktide. But it takes place in the Age of Sigmar. Excuse me.
You okay?
Takes place in the Age of Sigmar timeline, which is slightly different than the 40,000 timeline of Warhammer. It's the same universe, just different 40,000 years apart or whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it. So that was my first introduction, but then I quickly kind of you know, I was like, this is a really detailed world when I was playing Vermintide, and anyone who's ever played that, it's a really good game, very similar to Darktide. If you like Darktide, you'll like Vermintide. Great squad-based game for you and a couple of friends to pick up and just go through these levels, level up, kill some dudes, just, mm-hmm. you know, not like overly complicated, just kind of fun. And you can start to see that the lore is just really important in the world. And so I kind of started getting interested. I'm a lore head. I love just diving into lore, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, World of Warcraft, you name it. And so I started kind of like taking a look. And that got me onto Total Warhammer.
Mm-hmm. Total War.
Total Warhammer. Yeah,
which is a
Total War game,
but Warhammer Edition. Yeah.
Warhammer Edition. So that then I was playing that for a bit, and that once again, that's not in the 40K mm-hmm. universe, but it's still within the Warhammer universe. So I was getting into that a little bit, and like in that game in particular. So for all of those who are unfamiliar, Total War Warhammer 3 came out within the last. I want to say it's less than a year old at this point, or potentially like around a year old, and that is a. It's called a grand strategy RTS. It's technically still an RTS, but there's a grander scale to the things. It's kind of hard to describe. If you've ever played a Total War game, you know what I'm talking about. But there's like some really amazing factions in that game. And that was mm-hmm. another thing that just kind of kept creeping up. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, these are really interesting factions. So that was kind of my introduction. But once again, like you don't have enough context to really like understand what's mm-hmm. going on. And so I'd try out like I'm trying to think of like the first 40K things I ever, you know, Darktide's a good example. Darktide came out and I tried it out and I'm like, I'm walking around the ship in that game and I'm like, holy shit. This is so cool.
And like all of the games just throw you into the world. They don't explain shit. They're just kind of like, hey.
Yeah.
You either know or you're gonna have to figure it out because you are just a soldier in this war.
Praise the Emperor. Yeah, like out heretic.
Like good. Like yeah. We literally don't have time to explain this to you, so you're just gonna have to figure it out. What is a tech priest? I don't know. But, assume you know.
And that's the thing. It's like for people now, I intimately understand all of those different aspects of the game, and so when I drop into Darktide now, I'm like. Wow, like they made this all of this fun stuff into a video game. Like, look at that, yeah. Look at that. Like, that's oh my
they
god,
have done
I love it.
Such a good job of really. I mean, there isn't a genre of video game that Warhammer doesn't have a game for at this point.
It's insane. It's literally every single genre.
And it's brilliant, honestly, in my mind, from a business perspective. They're like, where are our customer base? The video gamers. Let's create 1,000 video games for this universe, get them. In the universe, even if they don't make...
And they could be 8 out of 10s. Like, they don't have to be
and then
perfect
once they're
games.
In the universe, they are hooked. And now they'll not only will they buy all the other games, but they're going to buy the minis, which are very expensive.
or where the money comes
exactly.
in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like having like half an army, I'm like, oh my god, like you spend $500 without even blinking, and you're like, that's just the starter setup, and you're just like, oh my god. And
every day I'm like almost buying $100 worth. I'm just like, oh yeah, I need a couple of those guys, and I'm like, oh, $100.
And I'm like, bad financial decisions. I'm like, I should be saving this.
Well, please continue to support the Pixelated Realms so we can continue to develop our Warhammer armies.
You got any more of that Warhammer, you know?
Got any more of that?
Well, that's a good way to jump into our agenda, I think, a little bit, because this is now the Warhammer podcast. Just kidding. But today we're going to be talking probably a little bit more about Warhammer. So we're going to do our weekly roundup, which we do every morning, which is kind of where we've already started. We're going to talk about we're going to respond to questions and ask Pixelated Realms. And we're going to talk about what is the best Fallout game, because we just can't stop talking about Fallout because of the TV show. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. But I do want to keep talking about Warhammer. I kind of interrupted there. I wanted to do our little intro bit. I am so excited, though, for Space Marine 2. And
I know.
Hope
it
feels half as cool as it looks. And so for anybody who's not familiar with that game, so Space Marine 1 is kind of a third-person shooter where you play as like one of the Space Marines, which is the human faction in Warhammer.
Adeptus Astartes.
So
baby.
I mean, without really going into like the details of all the factions, but there's basically human factions, which are these like Space Marines, and then there's like 1,000 sub factions, and then there are like evil humans that are kind of like Space Marines. Some of them are mutated. Yeah,
chaos,
some of them are mutated.
Humans, yeah.
Then there are like Zerg-like bugs, and
so. You categorize them in four different things.
We'll keep it real tight
for a second. Super quick. You have your super soldiers, Astartes, Space Marines. You have your Xenos, which is your aliens. So that includes your bug dudes, all the space elves, space everyone. You have your Imperial forces, which is like your regular army dude. And then you have your chaos forces.
Yeah, the evil humans.
That's
things.
Your four factions.
Okay, so you have all of those.
Evil hell.
In this game, you play as one of the super soldiers, so one of the ultramarines or some variation of, and you basically are just like going ham on like bugs and enemies and shit like that. And it looks super cool. And it looks gorgeous. I want to say it's Unreal Engine because it has that like look to it, but it comes out in September. I just had it up. It comes out in September of this year. And honestly, up at this point, it's kind of my like most anticipated game as of right now. I mean, maybe Star Wars Outlaws, but I actually think Star Wars Outlaws, I feel like, is going to come out and be like a 7 or 8 out of 10.
It's hard to say.
Just from like the current hype cycle. Like, I don't think it's going to be bad. I'm for sure going to buy it and I'm going to play it. But Space Marines is one of those games kind of like Helldivers where I kind of see it like it's either going to hit really hard or it's going to miss really hard. And from the trailers that I've seen right now, I feel like it's going to hit pretty hard because it's one of those games that's like it doesn't hold back in what it knows. It knows what it is. Its vision is very clear. You're a bloodthirsty super soldier that is very strong and literally dropped into hell. And it's like Doom-esque, right? And so like
I'm about to say, like, it's like Doom or like Mercenaries. Like, it's one of those games where it's intentionally making you a little bit overpowered for fun's sake.
Exactly. It's kind of like, what if you just had like super strength and they dropped you into hell and they're like, go have fun. And I'm here for that. Like, I need one of those every now and again, you know?
Oh, yeah. We need games like that. Yeah. And it's just funny because like, so just to go back a little bit, you were talking about how great it looks. They have released some gameplay footage of the game and they have some trailers. And just to rewind just a little bit here. So there is a Space Marines 1. It was released like before 2010. There is a 2011 Game of the Year remaster-esque, rehash of the game. It is a little controversial because it has had a $60 price tag for 13 years or something like that. I have never seen it discounted. And a lot of the reviews are negative on
just
Steam
because
people are like, Yeah, just like $60 a game. Like if it was on sale, yeah, absolutely. But this is kind of messed up. So I actually haven't played it yet. I've watched a lot of the gameplay footage of the first game. It's exactly what you said. You go in. It's you're an ultramarine and you're mm-hmm. fighting the orcs, which is one of the Xenos races, right?
Like,
it's space orcs. Like there's a whole thing about that. It's really funny. You get to just go in and kick ass. Like it's so much fun. But going back to the second game, you know, they've released the visual like design and like walking around the ship, showing some battle. Like it's just one of those games where visually it looks like it's like an 11 out of 10. They nailed it. Like, you know, if you go and watch the trailer right now and you know anything about the Warhammer universe, like, can you just see him walking around like this battle zone and this ship? Like, it's visually stunning. Like, if you don't want to get into Warhammer after watching, like, the trailer of this game, like, then you're never going to want to. But Alex is right. This could just not hit as hard as it looks. We all hope that's not the case. I hope this kicks off 40K to be a huge, you know, huge everyday thing for people. And I hope it's developed and continued and a good single-player experience.
Saber's good. Saber does a lot of good stuff. Like, they did, like, World War Z and stuff like that, which is fine. I mean, from what I remember, Saber Interactive makes a lot of good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
SnowRunner too, is really good. I don't think they've had any, like, really runaway hits lately. I'm trying to...
Oh my gosh, I was just looking at a part of the trailer again that I forgot, and it just shows your space marine just taking on hundreds or thousands of fucking Tyranids. Like if we get Tyranids, if we get, like, orcs, like, I'm curious what the story of this game is going to be, because... Like we've already implied with today's podcast, like, Warhammer has a lot of factions. It has a lot of, like, lore. And so are we going to get to fight orcs and Tyranids and Xenos, aliens? Like, so it's just like, I don't know. I highly encourage any of our viewers to take a look at that trailer.
Yeah, and most importantly, it's co-op. And so that's going to be fun. It's co-op.
Is it co-op?
On Steam, it's marked as online co-op.
Online co-op. It is up.
So
that
means
it's
going to be, like, a blast. I mean, it's like, imagine Doom with co-op. Like, that's just asking for trouble. And,
chainsaws, you know? Like, come on.
The original, like, Gears of War kind of, but it's, like, literally it's just a sword with a chainsaw.
Honestly,
on it.
And I think that's actually a good comparison. Like, the game does have a sort of Gears of War because it's third person. You have the chain sword. Now that I think about it, like, Gears of War was probably kind of inspired by Warhammer
it
stuff.
It does have a little bit. I mean, the armor style is relatively similar. Like, you're probably right.
And, like, the chain
weapon.
Yeah,
they probably did borrow
quite
a bit. So I'm excited. And I think it's a good year because this year it doesn't have any, like, AAA, you know, massive...
First person shooters, it doesn't have any
huge drops unless, you know, something gets announced. So I think it's such a good time for games like this to come in and like, you know, make a presence. And honestly, now that, like, we've kind of had this year that haven't had these, like, you know, first party massive, like, exclusive games, I kind of like it because it's allowing space for all of these other games to make a presence. And it's like, I feel like almost every other year we need, like, an empty year that we can come back and be like, hey, so Helldivers can thrive. So games like possibly Space Marines can thrive. Like, these games need this space. And I think these AAA teams need space to feel like they can actually, like, take their time and not crunch. So, like, I'm really enjoying, like, discovering new games, which is something that I feel like we used to do. You know, talking about retro games and stuff. We used to do that a lot more on, like, the N64 and Xbox and stuff like that. Yeah, you'd be like,
and you go rent a game.
Let's give this one a shot. Let's try it. Let's, you know, whatever. Yeah. And now it's like, so many top tier games come out so often that, like, you don't even have room for that because you're like, hey, every month some banger is going to come out that is guaranteed. Yeah, exactly.
You have
to
miss something.
It's guaranteed to be at least, like, good enough. So you don't have room for all of these games, and it's nice to have a year where you can, like, you know, try new things.
Yeah. You know, I'm just like, now that we're going down this Space Marines rabbit hole, I'm like, I'm really curious if it's going to be mostly Tyranid as the enemy, or if we're going to get other types.
From what we've seen, it's mostly like Tyranids. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's just what they're showing. And then they're like, you know, in the campaign, they're like, oh, gotcha. You know, there's like...
Or here's a DLC.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's all going to determine. But Saber Interactive is a great company. And so, I mean, I'm really excited to see, like, where this ends up. So... I think we got to stop talking about Warhammer. Wow, or we're just going to talk about it the entire podcast. Have you been playing anything else or should, other than like Fallout?
I mean, we played a little bit of Fallout 76. I think that conversation is going to come up a little later when we talk about the Fallout series.
Yeah, sorry if you guys can hear my daughter. She's trying to get my attention. Hi, sweetie.
She needs help on her first playthrough of Zelda. I still haven't beat it, so I'm sure Naomi will beat it before me. No, that's been it for the most part. Haven't had too much spare time this week, but you know, obviously that's where I've been diving into. Just trying to think of other topics that have been kind of circling around. What about Helldivers? So I haven't played in the last week here, but I want to know, what have you been playing? Like, I hear the community's been driving some really crazy, like, wars on different planets.
Well, I don't fill know about me in that, on that. But I have been playing, and I can't stop. And I've said this before in previous podcasts, and one of just the absolute beauties of Helldivers is I mean, it stems from, I think, them having like a very, very clear vision of what they want the game to be and not buckling on that vision, which I really, really respect. And I think a lot of people do. And I feel like too many companies buckle their vision for people complaining online. And like the CEO and all the developers online have been like, people ask for these features and they'll come out and be like, we're not doing that. It doesn't make sense for the game. And I very much respect that. And the reason I bring that up is because I feel like I can jump into that game like a couple hours a week and still I'm like, this game is still very fun. I'm still feel like
full
I'm part
enjoyment.
Of this.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like there's so many games where like I'll leave it for 2 weeks and I'll come back and I feel like I'm lost. I'm like, and then I don't want to keep playing because I'm like, this game is a totally different game. The meta is different. All this shit's different. It doesn't matter. But in that game, even if the meta changes, it's like, I'm just rediscovering things and I'm just like, whoa, there's a new enemy and all this shit, but it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't actually like affect, it just means I have to like adapt really quick. But
and that's a good point about life's, not lives, but the live service wasn't the word I was looking for. Community war game, like community driven war games. I'm like thinking about Foxhole, of course, right? Which is another game that's persistent war. That's what I was looking for, like a persistent war game. And like in Foxhole, amazing game. If you're unfamiliar, I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before. It's a game where you drop in as basically a World War II foot soldier and. As a community, you create a war. You build your equipment, you build your weapons, you create transport lines. Like it creates, it's a immense amount of logistical like cooperation among the community. But like in that game, if you drop in and there's already all these things set up because the war is already happening, it's very hard to integrate yourself into it in a meaningful way. It's like, okay, man, go pick up a gun and become, you know, another dead body. But in Helldivers, you don't really run into that. Like, you can pick up a round of Helldivers and, like you said, not do meta or just not having played for months. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't change the game. Like, it doesn't fundamentally make you worse or better, but you still can experience those new things. So I think that's really impressive.
And, you know, like a daughter and family, that's like great because that means I can, you know, I can play in my own time and I don't have to feel like I have to grind out anything. Like I think I have like 60 hours in the game and I'm only like level 30, which is awesome. And they up the cap. I want to say it's 100 now or somewhere near there, but it was 50 and now it's like almost 100 or somewhere around there. The highest I've seen, I think I saw an 81 or maybe it was a 91. I think it was an 81 and I was like, wow, that's amazing. But anyways, so yeah, Helldivers 2, still great. Highly recommend. If you haven't played it, you got to pick it up. But they had a major order recently. So there was a few over the last couple weeks. Like one was like, oh, I love this like live evolving story that they have. It was like, one was, oh, the automatons are weak. We need to, you know, destroy their army. So we went and we did that. And we completely obliterated them from the map. Then, of course, nobody thought that was really the end, you know. And then a week later, or a couple, whatever, afterwards, a huge automaton, like, force came. And they're like, oh, that was just the scouting party. And this is the real army. And it, you know, took over, like, a like you know, 20% or whatever of the map and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, push that back and stuff like, you know. So that was really cool. And then they were like, oh, we need to kill 2 million or something around there, like 2 million or like 20 million. I don't know. I think it was 2 million. 2 million Terminids, which are the bug types. And we had like a week or somewhere around a week to do that. And the whole community did it in like 5 hours. They like obliterated that one.
Just going back to 40K. Terminids, yeah. Tyranids.
There's a lot of 40K in Helldivers. Just saying. I don't think that's a coincidence. Like... Yeah, like I don't know, where did stratagems come from? Is that an actual word, or is that
stratagem?
Did that arrive from a
Warhammer thing?
A plan, yeah, or scheme, especially one used to outwit an opponent. I'm trying to think. I know it's just like a word, but I'm trying to see if like it was first made popular by Warhammer, and then everything just, I don't know. Anyways, we could probably, yeah, it probably is.
I'm sure it's a military term, but as far as video games is concerned, I've never seen it used in the same way as
we could probably add, you know,
there's a simulator there.
You know, make anything related to Warhammer if we tried hard enough. Yeah, exactly.
Any space,
but so
video,
I mean,
game
that game
stuff,
is just amazing. And then they are, I think they said there's like a new enemy type for automatons, like a new giant crawler coming, or if it hasn't already came, and maybe it's already here.
Wow.
So it's like, hi, honey, sorry. it's amazing to me. Like, so many games claim to be a live service game. And honestly, in my opinion, none of them do it. And I posted about this on Threads, and I was in a ranty mood, but I still feel like it's very much true, is that just because you have a season pass in your game does not make your game a fucking live service game.
Yes.
It's like, the live service means constant content drops. Means,
it's true. It means you have to play that game frequently to experience everything it has to
offer.
Means
it's
because
it's an evolving
experience
world.
That can change.
And to me, like, it means that it's like, like an MMO to me would be a subset of a live service game. And like, the difference would be like, MMOs mean like, okay, it's massively multiplayer, which means giant lobbies or server, like super servers or something like that. And a live service doesn't have to be massive. Like, you know, for instance, Helldivers is only 4 people at a time, but it's still an evolving world. And so many games are like, oh, this is a live service game. It's like, for instance, let me see. Yeah, I was going to say Rainbow Six Siege, but For Honor is a good one. It's like, they consider that a live service game because they have season passes and they drop new characters. To me, that's not a live service. That's just DLC. And it's like, just because your game has DLC does not make it a live service. And I get...
Just because you're adding to the game as it continues,
probably
does not
why there's a confusion
service.
There as far as like a business executive is concerned. Because to a business person, they're probably like, we are continuing to maintain this game,
right?
And therefore, it's a live service. But word has been overused so much that people now expect the word "live service," meaning that there is going to be a flow of content, not a flow of downloadable mini microtransactions.
Right.
And there's a disconnect there. And Helldivers, there's no disconnect. You are like, this is what a live service
no
is.
Disconnect.
There is constant stuff. They're constantly introducing new weapons, new enemy types, new mission types. And to the point of where I'm like, wow, how much do they have up their sleeve? Because every time I play the game, there's something new. And I'm just like, this is incredible. And they dropped, and like, and because of the, and they respect my dollar, which is so big. Like, No, it was a $40 game.
Wasn't even a $60 game.
They have their, I forget what it's called, their, whatever, I'm going to call it a battle pass, but it's not called that. It's called something else. But they have their, like, battle pass, yeah, which is, you could, which is not really a battle pass because you don't have to pay for the, like, first one. It's really just, like, your progression, right? So you get, like, as you progress through the game, you can unlock tokens, which then you can use to basically buy gear. And then, but then you can pay for additional tracks to get other gear. But none of it is, like, overpowered.
But you're not even forced to. You can do the free track and unlock enough...
The currency, just whatever the currency
what's
is.
The term? You know, real world money currency?
Yeah,
that
and
allows you to unlock the
And, like,
the paid
I paid so, $20 to unlock it or whatever and to get some currency because I was like, one, I was like, I love this game. And because I love this game and I feel like they respect my dollar, I will pay for some of this extra content. And, like, armor, like, let's say you didn't unlock it, the currency through your thing. If you were to buy with money, the currency to, they do have like a store that has a revolving like armor sets and stuff like that. The armor in any other game that arm, like a set of armor and a helmet would be like $9.99 or $19.99 in some games, right? Like that. It's like $2 or a dollar in this game. Like depending, it's like a dollar for the armor and a dollar for the helmet. Right. And I'm like, yes. And because of that, if I saw a cool piece of armor,
yeah,
I'd buy it. And I did. I bought like two sets of armor because I was like, cool. Yeah. It was like a couple dollars. I paid, I want to say I paid $20 for all the credits. And then I bought the one of the battle passes. And then I bought like a couple sets of armor. And I was like, thank you. Like, I feel respected. Yeah. And I was like, if they asked
feel
for
like
more,
you got a good value.
If they put
yeah.
more stuff out, I would not feel like shit. To buy it. It's like if I play like Modern Warfare or something and I see a cool set of armor and it's like $20, I'm like, fuck you. I don't give a shit how cool this armor is.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go buy a
it's
whole video game
ridiculous.
For that and play,
and so,
you know,
like,
get more entertainment value.
I've gone down like a couple different tangents on this, but Helldivers is doing it right. And they're doing it right on so many levels, and I want to support them because of that. And the game is fun. I have no end of positivity. And right now there's a lot of games that have been coming out and I still think this is my game of the year. Because on just so many levels, because it's like, wow. It's just so good. It's so good. It feels like it was made by a gamer, not by a company. You know what I mean? And there's not a lot of that anymore. And
I think it's the strongest co-op.
That's coming
game
off
I've
of Remnant 2, which
a number
we love.
Of years. Like I would say, yeah, it's yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, we've loved Remnant 2. Yeah, I mean, I still think about Remnant 2, where I'm like,
but we did our time.
I gotta say, like, I don't have a desire to like go back and play it right now. I'm still look back at it and mm-hmm. I'll be like, dude, that was a fun 40, 50 hours or whatever. You know, like I'm like, that was really like,
yes,
it was one of the first things that on the first episode of our podcast, you mentioned Remnant 2 and we bought it. And I was like, this game is awesome. Yeah. Like I was so surprised. It was our big sleeper.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, hit during the beginning of our,
you know,
our podcast.
I'm going to go on another tangent here, but that brings up a good point is like games like that are, we put our time in, and I feel like there's a little bit of a stigma when people are like, I don't play it anymore. And so that means it's not good. And it's like, no, the game was great. We did our time. We got our value out of it and we love it. And I would go back to it if there was like another DLC or something. I think there actually was a DLC. I don't think we really went and did it again, but it's like, I certainly got my value out of it. Yeah. I still talk highly about it just because I'm not playing it now. Doesn't mean I don't like love that game still, even if it's a,
mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent of that as well, where I'm like, think this is the way I mm-hmm. always thought about it, especially when I was a teenager and money was, you know, super tight. It was like, look, how much enjoyment am I getting out of this $50 or $60 or whatever I'm paying for the game? If I got 50 hours of enjoyment for $60,
like $20 or whatever, like per hour,
value, right? Like, so, right. And that's insane. You cannot, you know, you go to the movies, you pay whatever it is nowadays, $15-$20 for a ticket, you get 2 hours of, you know, of fun, right? So it's just like, it's like, if you think about it, like, and of course, this is bearing in mind, you enjoy the game. You know, you're bang for your buck. Video gaming, and this is, I don't have any statistics, but I know this is a fact, is the most, it's the cheapest hobby for what you get. You know, it is a really cheap hobby for, like, you know, we're not this type of person, but I know people who are like, yeah, you know, I bought, you know, whatever, Counter-Strike in 2010, and yeah, I made 1,000,000,000 hours on it now, and that's just the game I play. You know, like, some people just play one game. My fiance, she loves League of Legends, like, and she'll play ARAM and Teamfight Tactics, but like, and yes, she's, you know, spent some money on some skins and stuff, but like, think about that. That game's free, and she's gotten thousands of hours of entertainment and playtime and enjoyment. And I'm like, that value is incredible.
Yeah. And part of the reason why Riot is such a successful game company. Like, kind of looping back to what we were talking about, I was talking about before, is that, like, if I put a lot of time into a game, I don't feel bad if I were to buy something in game with, like, you know, microtransactions, stuff like that, but I have to feel respected. I have to feel like I'm not being, like, played. You know, like, I'm not being ripped off. And because of that, because you do get a really good bang for your buck. And, like, League of Legends is a good example. It's like, the game is free, first of all. And you're like, hey, like, I've spent hours playing this game. If I spend 10, 20 bucks to buy a skin or whatever, I don't really play League of Legends, but not anymore, at least. But it's like, if I pay that, like, to me, it's like, they've already gotten their value. I've gotten the value out of it. I do not feel bad putting money in. And I know not everybody can afford that. And I'm not saying that's not the point of this at all. I'm saying, you know, like, you know, if you play for free, you play for free. Yep. That is a great way to play the game. But, you know, as somebody who, like, has a few extra dollars and I can be like, hey, like, I could pay $10 to get the skin that I want. Like, I feel like they deserve it and they've earned it. And then there's some games where I'm like, even if they've earned it, if I feel like you're trying to fuck me, I'm not going to do it. And executives need to figure that out.
Yeah. And it's very right. I mean, what Alex is saying, it's very different between how we were when we were kids and how we are now. You know, now we're adults with, you know, jobs and whatnot. So it's a very different experience. We feel, you know, we feel more obliged now to invest the money in the things that we're enjoying. I think, you know, we'll go into this on a different episode one day payments and we could talk about Helldivers again and Riot. But Riot, in a lot of ways, Riot to me is the the gold standard for how to do monetization, not because they're perfect at monetization, but because they, like you said, Alex, they have a good respect and understanding of how the monetization works. And so, you know, it's like you were saying, right? If I really like a character called Swain in League of Legends, right? Swain is a great character. I played 1,000 matches with Swain. I was really digging him. I was waking up every morning thinking about kicking some ass with that character. Mm-hmm. So when someone was like, hey, you know, here's $5 for this skin that will, you know, give you a little bit of diversity, a little bit of individualism. You know, like, I've already, the game's already given me something for free. It's given me the entertainment and value I was looking for. So, like, $5, $10 for a skin, like, coming from a free game feels completely fine.
I feel like we should do an episode on, like, live services.
But it's a big topic.
Like, what they are and explain them. It's like, I wonder if we know anybody who works at a company. anyways. Yeah, might be good to have on. But let's go into the next section. We're going to go so people can write in. So if you want to ask us a question or leave a comment, you can go to pixelatedrealms.org/ask. That's ASK. And you can leave us a comment or a question. We'll talk about it right now. So we're going to go into our questions and see what is up. And as always, we have a few. See, Ralph is now trying to screw with us and tell us it's not him, but it's for sure him. He says Snoop Dogg and Nicki Minaj in Call of Duty as my cameo picks. He's asking questions and answering them within his username. From his previous questions, I could come on the show after Ghost comes to Steam. Okay. he's a Ghost pro, Ghost of Tsushima. Okay, but let's dive into it.
Oh,
yeah. Wow, so Ralph is the biggest by
Ralph
far. So
and
he
Dustin are all
a
huge
minor
ghost fans.
Like ghost celebrity. So he was like top five best raiders in it, to the point where the official Ghost game had him on one of their podcasts to play with the voice actor of Jin Sakai. He's probably going to come in and be like that. No, that's not true. It was this and that. But that was like the gist of it.
I'll have to play.
So we're definitely going to have him on to talk about Ghost at some point, and probably other games as well. I've been trying to get him on just in general. He says he'll join at some point, but let's talk about his questions here. So some games have new iterations released each year, like sports games, Call of Duty, etc. While others find success going years between games. How do you feel about racing yearly games, releases with only minor improvements additions? Would you rather wait or have yearly games? So that's a great question.
I have thoughts on this one because I was into the racing game scene for a while. Okay, few thoughts. So I'm going to try to apply what I know about Formula One racing games to other sports games. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong about anything in the comments, but I have a feeling I'm not super wrong. So it's a good question. And I find that it's kind of a hard answer because for the most part, so, like I was mentioning, I really got into the Formula One scene and the Formula One games. I have a racing wheel. I kind of moved on from that obsession. But while I was going through it, getting that yearly updated game that updated the drivers, it updated the cars, it updated the tracks. So from that perspective, as someone who was following that scene, and I assume if you're into football or hockey or whatever, you know, this still applies. Getting those updates is really important. You know, like, to keep your game moving forward, you do need to have your new players, your new drivers, whatever the game is. And so, yes, I think creating this year over year, as we were referring to before, you know, a live service game, it becomes this debate, right? So do they release the game every year, charge you $70 and keep changing it? Or do they just create one game? It is the NHL game, or it is the NFL game, or it is the Formula One game, and then they just update it every year, charge you a subscription or charge you, you know, a new raid or something in that realm. And I'll be honest, there's positives and negatives, right? The positive is what I already talked about. We need to get the updated drivers, the updated cars, updated tracks, updated football rules. I don't know, whatever it may be. You got to get the updates. But the negative is that they love to experiment year over year. And a lot of these companies just tend to, like, I don't know, just kind of drop the ball and monetize really poorly. So I'd say the negatives are, one, the monetization. I think it was the FIFA game, which is no longer called FIFA. It's called something else. So FIFA, and once again, no stats on hand, but it's like one of the biggest games in the world. Like FIFA has like some of the biggest sales of any game that's like ever existed. People love playing FIFA. And I remember there was like a system where they basically had loot boxes, and you had to like do the loot boxes to get your players who would then be on your team. And so like those kind of changes, right? Like sabotage the entire idea of the game. And I think there's a lot of greedy monetization that happens in these year over year games. Even Call of Duty, right? This doesn't just have to be a sports game. Call of Duty, I don't think is a good example of monetization. I think it's probably one of the more negative examples of monetization where you pay for the game and then you're paying another 20 to 40 bucks to look like fucking who knows, you know, whatever. Nicki Minaj. Yeah. And that to me is past the line where I start to get irritated, where I'm like, oh, you know, if you play Call of Duty a lot, you want to pay your money to look like Nicki Minaj, no problem, whatever. No, I kind of do have a problem with it. Like, I feel like they're taking time, effort, money, brain power to invest into these money making objects that do not enhance the game, as opposed to investing your time, effort, and thought into things that do improve the game. And so I think we're getting a shift, and I blame Fortnite for this. I think we're shifting into this world where everyone is just trying, you know, it's just these decisions are all being driven trying to make billions of dollars, right? They're trying to be the next Fortnite. They're trying to be the next thing that is able to capture this huge sum mm-hmm. of money, and no longer is it about the game at that point. It just becomes about the money. So I think, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is, it's a deep question. We can talk about it more. But in general, I think they have to be very careful about how they yearly release games. I think for the most part, they would benefit from releasing them less quickly. I would be happy mm-hmm. with every other year for a sports game, even if they just did like a mid-season or a mid-year update. But yeah. Like I said, you know, there's a positive to it. You want to have the most modern, you know, you want to have your most modern teams, your most modern rules and all that good stuff. So it's a balance. And I think we're trending in the wrong direction yeah. as far as it, that balance goes.
It's definitely a tricky
but,
subject
there's still
because
a few
I feel like
doing,
yearly
doing
releases of games is a strategy. And I don't think it's something that can be discounted completely, but I do think it's something that has been abused, which is kind of what Tyler was alluding at, right? Like that it's a being abused in order to monetize something that necessarily isn't, you know, kind of falsely, like, you know, falsely, you know, suggesting that there's new content when there, maybe the content is like, could have been a DLC pack. Yeah.
Or they cut content. Like they, and that's the thing. It's like, hey, yeah. pay another $70. Okay, what's new in the game? Well, we updated the names of the drivers.
Yeah, like, to, like
okay.
you know, people have
Did
been suggesting for a
like,
long time, especially in sports
isn't
games,
always there.
Where it's like, hey, why don't we just have like a yearly pack update that's like, a you know, that you pay $30 for whatever, I don't know, and you updates the roster, and then you can select what roster. Do you want the 2023 roster? Do you want the 2024 roster? Right. Whatever. And then every like 5 years, they update the game. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And so there's, I do feel like
right,
there's
the
a way, but that also, like from
a
business
platform,
perspective,
yeah.
comes with some, you know, there comes with like framework development and stuff like that. So it's expensive to do like those kind of things. And I'm not, I'm just kind of trying to think of both sides. But
yeah.
yeah. But then you get games like Call of Duty.
And we're generalizing
where,
over the
so
scope
Call of Duty,
of many
I think, is a tough one to
too.
Talk about in this because it's not exactly a yearly cycle. But it's also being worked on, but it's being worked on by three or four different companies. So what happens is like one company works on the game for like 3 or 4 years and then another company. And then that's why it comes out every year. But then you get games like Modern Warfare 3, which just came out and felt light, right? It felt like a reskin of Modern Warfare 2, but they still charge the full amount for it. And so you're kind of like, oof, you know, like
I don't know. I feel like I have more critical. So Call of Duty, I'm a huge, I really enjoy Call of Duty. It's actually one of my favorite shooting multiplayer games. I know that's a crazy thing to say to a lot of people, but I just have a special place in my heart for Call of Duty. I think they release way too frequently. Way too frequently. It's basically ever, and I want to say like, over the last 10 years or so, right? Like, after we got, like, Modern Warfare 2, I feel like Call of Duty peaked at Modern Warfare 2. Like, that was kind of, like, the peak. And then they've just been, like, re-releasing the same shit over and over and over again. Like, Battle Royale's cool and all that stuff. But, like, I don't know, man. I've been quite disappointed with Call of Duty in general as a entire development over the last 10 years or so, because I don't feel like they've changed. They haven't developed. It's just the same game every time. Mm-hmm. When someone says, hey, a new Call of Duty came out, I feel like, and they ask
well,
me
they
to buy
tried
it,
to
I feel
do
like I'm wasting my money because I
some
know
interesting stuff
I have
to
the same
like,
game from
address
a year
this,
ago.
These issues specifically on the like yearly releases, right? So like the Modern Warfare series of games, so Modern Warfare 1, 2, and 3. I think maybe just 2 and 3, but 2 and 3... all the guns and everything you unlock in 2 are available in 3. So it's like the game is kind of like Modern Warfare 2 Plus. And it's the same thing in like Warzone. Like you can use all the 1, 2, and 3 guns and everything you've unlocked and stuff like that. So they're trying to kind of do like this thing like, hey, like we realize that, you know, you bought last year and then this year. And it's like we want you to feel like – but at the same time, that makes it feel like
it's
an expansion.
Yeah.
Instead of like a full game, I guess kind of to me, like it's really complicated. It's not black or white.
But that's the thing. It's like what Yeah, like what is a full game? You know, to me, like I haven't, since Modern Warfare 2, there hasn't been a full Call of Duty game. They feel like they're all picking right.
Well, up. Well, I think from we should go on to the next question. Like a template, but it feels like that question we could probably do a whole episode on. It's what I've gotten around to because it's a tough one to fully answer. Next one is specifically for Tyler. What game soundtrack was the closest thing to a perfect score in your opinion?
I love that question.
Dude, we're already way over.
So, just go ahead and throw out the main topic for today. No, I'll try to make this quick. So, a perfect score. So, there's definitely quite a few. To me, a good soundtrack is a soundtrack that not only supports the video game, but enhances the emotional feel of the entire experience, both narratively and within the battle and mechanical aspects of the game. That's a big ask, right? Especially for video games, which tend to be a very long format thing. So the music also has to be enjoyable over a lot of repetition or repeated, you know, viewings or similar mm-hmm. situations. There's also, you know, just in general, there's a lot of tracks. Like video games require a lot of different like situations queue. Where you need to create a cue, which is just the defining feature of a piece of music, right? In a film. Exactly. So like a cue is like a defined area of music. So what do I think is the game that nailed it pretty much perfectly? There's a few. I think Final Fantasy IX and Final Fantasy X are the two that come to mind first and foremost. Both of those games have soundtracks that will change your life. At least that's how I felt about them. Final Fantasy X in particular, it has some incredible moments where it's just pulling emotion right out of you with the music and just, like I said, enhancing your experience. The music doesn't have to be the end-all be-all, but it has to enhance the feelings that you're supposed to be experiencing. So I think those are two I would start with. I think there's definitely a couple where I think the soundtrack was better than the game. You might say, you know, I love Kingdom Hearts, but I almost want to say Kingdom Hearts, where the soundtrack was 10 out of 10, but like Kingdom Hearts 3 wasn't like a 10 out of 10. But Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 were freaking amazing. Yeah, there's definitely a lot out there. I could go into this all day. But I think those are the three I'd call out for today.
That you wouldn't. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to our final segment. But before we dive in, we just want to say that we really appreciate everyone who follows and subscribes to us. We post new episodes every Tuesday morning on podcast services and on YouTube. You can find us on Instagram, Threads, and YouTube at Pixelated Realms Podcast. And the best way to support us is really to, you know, send us a follow or a subscribe. It means a lot. We don't have a lot of followers or subscribers, so like every time that we get one, it's you know, cause for celebration for us. So we really appreciate it, and everybody that listens to us. So let's get into our kind of final segment here. So what is the best Fallout game? And the reason we're asking this is obviously because of the TV series. We talked about Fallout a little bit last episode, and we just can't stop talking about it because the series was so good. Ty, did you finish it? Yeah, me too.
I did finish it. It's funny because first and foremost, I enjoyed it very much. So I thought it was good film. I thought it was a great video game adaptation. I thought it was I'd like to give it extra points for the video adaptation part. I think it like really embraced that. I actually do have a handful of criticisms from a narrative point of view and from a filmmaking point of view.
Cool.
But this
yeah, me too. I mean, I give it a 10 out of 10.
So I won't necessarily go into
like,
that.
I thought it was, like,
but either way, yes, I did finish
it. Because my bar
for
video game stuff is a little bit lower than normal, but I thought it was great. Like, I thought it nailed the Fallout vibe. And I tweeted this or whatever on Threads the other day, and it got a little bit of controversy online. But I said, I was like, this is the best of the Fallout story, was the TV show. Out of all the games, and people are like, well, you know, maybe Fallout 1 or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. This is like the story was the most I've been engaged in the Fallout story. And I don't think that's actually a negative to Fallout. And I feel like a lot of people were taking it that way, that because I said the story in the show was really good, that the game story was shit. And that's not true. It's just that the story in the Fallout games is secondary to the exploration, and that's how it's always been. And so,
well, you're supposed to be experiencing the story through the exploration, which is just inherently not
you're supposed to experience the world universe and the environment, and that exactly. And so that is the focus of the game is that you're this naive character who's dropped into this hellscape and you're just going through and just exploring all the world. And that's what you're supposed to see. Like, you know, there's a lot of little stories in Fallout. You know, for instance, you go into a building and you discover, you know, I was playing Fallout 76, which we'll talk about a little bit, but, and you know, I went into this, building that was like a business. It was a corporation, and you end up finding out that, of course, the corporation was purposefully like trying to kill people by poisoning them through their products and stuff like that, and that, you know, like all this stuff. And you know, it's these like, and then you find out that, you know, they end up getting theirs in the end. And it's kind of like these like little stories are more important in the Fallout world than the main plot line, and by design, I think. And so when I say like, oh, the TV show was the best like coherent end-to-end story, it's because the Fallout games aren't really designed for that. Now, I understand, and there's going to be a lot of people outcrying about this. I love the Fallout 3 story. I love the Fallout New Vegas story. I never played 1 and 2. And I...
I was about to say, I think it's fair for us to say what we played, because I have not played 1. I have not played Tactics, although I'm interested. I have played 2 for like 10 minutes, so forgive me, but I'm really interested in playing 2 because I love 90s games of that style. I have played and beat 3.
Yeah, I have played, but I have not beaten Vegas, and I have played and beat
Fallout
3.
And I've played game. 76.
Vegas, I've gotten through a lot of it, but haven't beaten like the final story, but I've seen enough videos online that I know it. And then I've completely played through 4 like 10 times. And then, yeah, Fallout 76, I've played through most of as well.
So I feel like trying to discuss the best Fallout game, you have to kind of work through them in order a little bit. So like I said, I'm not going to comment on the ones I don't know about. I think 1 and 2 are probably fabulous. I just haven't played them. So starting with 3. So 3 is a big barrier to entry, right? Mm-hmm. It's a game where I've heard a lot of people, they say like, oh yeah, I started it and then I didn't know what to do, so I just stopped. I'm like, that's actually really fair, because I did that 2 or 3 times before I ever played and beat the game. But Fallout 3, first and foremost, we have to remember that Fallout 3 was part of, with like Morrowind and Oblivion, Fallout 3 was Bethesda's continued rise to becoming the Bethesda we know nowadays. So Fallout 3 was part, like, the Bethesda we know and love would not exist if Fallout 3 and Morrowind and Oblivion, it was more aligned with Oblivion, but if those games didn't exist, like, we wouldn't have Bethesda. And so Fallout 3, first and foremost, you start the game. The way you start the game was incredibly unique at the time. I couldn't think of anyone who had quite as unique of a start at that time, where you start as a literal baby being birthed out of your mother. And then that's your character creation. And you're like, the next scene is you walking around as a toddler, and like, you're picking like toys and booklets that give you like stat development. Like, that, the way to build your character in Fallout 3 was so incredibly unique that it captured a lot of people just right there. Then you continue, you go to high school, like, you're part of the vault. Like, you really feel like you're part of the vault. And you're going to hear us emphasize that a lot, because Bethesda games are just really good at that. They're good at making you feel like you are a character in the world, not the conglomeration. The opposite of Dragon Dogma 2, right? In Dragon Dogma 2, you are the main character and everyone's going to call you that. You know, in Fallout, you're not. You're just a person. And so in Fallout 3, you know, I'm not really spoiling anything on a 20-year-old game here, but, you know, you leave, you're in a vault and you leave a vault, or like all the games. And And that's kind of it. Like, the game suggests, like, there's a town nearby, but it's not in no way is it, like, telling you to really do anything at all. So the game just, like, says, welcome to the wasteland. And if you're not in the right mood for it, like, you're going to stop right there because it's challenging. You know, it's, like, really challenging just to be like, here's the wasteland, have fun. But once you start to dig in, right, hey, I see there's a shopping center over there. Let's go check it out. So you're walking to the shopping center. You get attacked by a rat. You kill the rat. Okay, that was fine. But you walk into the shopping center, and now you're like, oh, this could have been anything, right? Nothing at all or something. But then you find out that there's raiders in the shopping mall that are cannibals, or, you know, this little bit of storytelling, like you were saying, Alex, starts to develop. And then you spend the next 2 hours going through the shopping center, killing raiders and stealing their crap and getting their money and resources as just this, like, really weird little side mission that you just did yourself. And now you're better, bigger, and stronger. But you haven't done anything, really. That was just you existing in the wasteland. And so, like, when you add all of those up, and of course there is main story missions and whatnot, but when you kind of, like, progress like that, and you have this, like, very exploratory mindset, the game is so rewarding and fulfilling. And your decisions, you know, there's quite a few points in the game where you're asked to make decisions, and those decisions highly affect how the game develops. You know, much like the Mass Effect series, which is one of my favorite series of all time, those decisions matter, and it felt impactful and useful. So to me, Fallout 3 was my introduction to the series, and it knocked it out of the park. I loved the immersion, the companions in that game, the story I thought was overall.
I don't know if we have enough time to talk about every game in that.
I don't remember, but I do remember him.
Fallout 3 was the same for me. It was my first introduction to the game. I actually really love the story. So now when you're, like, in the vault and your father goes missing and you just leave the vault to go find your father. And at the very end, and yeah, this is a spoiler, but if you haven't played the game by now, it's, you know, it's old. By the end, you end up building this giant robot called Liberty Prime that goes and kicks the ass of the enemy, basically. Literally like Iron Giant. And it's so cool. And also, I mean, there's so, and like, literally, I still remember, I don't have to look any of these things up because the story was so good. The immersion was so good. It's like, I remember, like, do you remember there's 3Dog, which is the radio host, best radio host in Fallout. You know, you have the Tunnel Snakes, which is the gang in the very beginning that, like, when you're like a young adult and you're like in the vault and they're like these, like, greasers and they're like giving you a tough time. So there's like a lot of very memorable moments in that game. If you do go back and play the game now, it feels aged because it's old, you know, so there's like a lot of, like, the textures are really, you know, flat, and there's a lot of blurry, and there's a lot of empty space in between things. And I mean, but I don't hold that against the game at all.
Blurry,
but, you know, it is very good. This, you know, I remember some of the key points in the story, but it didn't, like, you know, it's no Mass Effect, you know, like you were talking about. And then Fallout, let's go through these kind of quickly. So Fallout New Vegas, I've played through most of it. That's a game, I actually re-downloaded that after the TV series, and I was playing that. I played a few hours on my character, and I was like trying to remember everything. Same thing with that one, is like it feels a little dated because it is. That one came out 2010. That was made by Obsidian, though, not Bethesda. But it was that one has a lot more story based. That one's a lot more, as opposed to Fallout 3, where they just toss you in the wasteland and they're like, go find your father. This one is like you start off by getting shot in the face and you survive somehow, right? And the Fallout logic. And you don't actually start in a vault. I think that's one of the only ones you don't start in a vault. And then you're just trying to track down your killers, but the story is very intense. And then you end up finding out that you go to New Vegas, which is this, like, you know, revitalization of Vegas. And you find out, some spoilers here, but again, it's an old game, that there's a brain of the old Robco CEO called Mr. House running Vegas. And you go through, and then there's also Caesar. You didn't know that one? He's actually in it. He's on that council that at the one scene. I'm not gonna ruin anything, but he's that's him. And There's also this like character called Caesar who ends up creating this like new Roman Empire who's trying to like, you know, take over everything and stuff like that. But very detailed backstories for all these characters and stuff like that. So that's a fun game. But again, it does feel dated. It could use a remake. I mean, people have been crying for a remake for that game forever. And I think a lot of people probably want that made as well, like internally. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean that one's hailed as like one of the best RPGs ever made.
It does feel aged, New Vegas, and it's been on my list for years. If they could remake it, it would just bump it up to the modern like standards of things. But I think if you just took exactly what it was and just modernized it, it would be amazing. Yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, is they said they're still making it. You know, maybe I know they are,
like KOTAR.
And then you have Fallout. Well, I just want to knock them all out. So Fallout 4.
They're teasing us, man. I don't like this.
Honestly, a great game. I do love it. It did come out Fallout in a 4. Bit. There was some controversy when it first came out. Because it was like super, super buggy, even for Bethesda standards. But now, obviously, it's a long time. So, you know, you can mod it, which is, I hesitate to say because I don't think a game should be good with just because it has mods. But yeah, I know. It drives me crazy. But anyways,
That's Bethesda for you. I enjoyed Fallout 4, but I think in the shortest possible explanation,
we'll talk about that. The story
Fallout 4 was a very enjoyable experience.
The base building, I didn't like it the was base something they attempted. I think that was the first game they did base building in, and I respect that they tried it. They should have acknowledged that it didn't work and just move on from that because they added it in like Starfield, and nobody wanted that. But anyway, so yeah, the story in that one, the beginning of the story was strong. The end of the story was absolute dog shit. And I mean, there's literally a line in that game where you ask the main bad guy who,
very, very
and
weak.
I'm not going to spoil anything in this particular game because there's probably a lot of people who are going to go and play it because of the show. But you end up asking the main bad guy, like what his motivation was. And he goes, it's too complicated to talk about. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? That's your answer? That is such writer's bullshit, like phone it in. And anyway, so like.
Yeah.
No.
I also remember getting to some crucial decisions in that game and feeling like none of them aligned with who I actually wanted to be in that game. So like it was like, you can do this, you can do this, you can side with these various people, and I was like, I don't want to side with any of them. Like, I remember being like super upset because I like created a save and sided with each faction, and I was like, I hated every single option. And I was like, it actually kind of ruined the game for me because it was like, forgive me, but it was like the Brotherhood, there's like rebels, and then there's like the bad and then the bad guys.
I think
and
that's I was kind like, of the all theme three of the game, though, is people that people suck.
And they were all bad people.
Let's roll through this. Fallout 4, a little bit of Fallout 4. So the story sucks, settlement building is boring, but I do think it has the best exploration. 76. It has really good exploration. The combat is good. I like the combat. VATS was a little underwhelming in this game. I never used it. Because you don't need to. There's no point. It might as well just have had bullet time. But anyways, so, and then let's talk about Fallout 76.
I never used it.
That game is a dumpster fire. And I wanted to like it so bad. But so Fallout 76 is the online version of Fallout that was released like 6 years ago. It's a couple years after Fallout 4. Like three or 4 years after Fallout 4. And so you start in a vault and you come out. Yeah, and so, like, the reason that it had a rocky start is because they released it, like, half done. So there was, like, no quests. There was no NPCs.
Very rocky.
It was literally just you, the stuff in the world that you could find, and the enemies. And then, but over time, they kind of fixed a lot of that. So they added NPCs, they added a quest line, they added, like, events and more, like, live service-y things. So now you can do, like, raids, and there's all these, like, fun things. Oh, and you can base build. So, I gave it a shot like 2 or 3 years after the game came out and was like, you know, this isn't as bad as everyone said. And that's probably because they added all those things. But then I replayed it again like a week ago and I was like, yeah, it's all right. You know, but it looks old. It feels old, older than it is. That's something that I felt was really weird. And, like, I get it. It's an online game, so they had to probably, like, down-res some stuff, and they have to make it available to consoles and whatever. But, like, it's like it felt like 15 years old instead of 8. You know, it felt like twice as old as it should have been, and it looked like shit. Yeah, exactly. And then when I jumped into 4, because I did it 76 first, yeah. And then I jumped into 4.
It was not as polished as 4, and it came out after.
Like, 4 makes 76 feel like garbage, and 76 makes 4 feel like amazing. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going back into this. Like, Fallout 76 is just such garbage. But okay, now that we've kind of gone through all of the games, now we can kind of assess it. So Tyler, like,
yeah.
What is your favorite, and what is your worst? What is the worst?
Yeah. So, okay, as I was saying, Fallout 3 is definitely my favorite right now. I have a sneaky suspicion if I played 2, and I got into it, I would really like 2, but I haven't been there yet. So 3 is currently my favorite. I'm also, like I said, I would very much like to beat New Vegas because I hear that's incredible. So for me, 3 excels in making you feel like you have an impact on the world. It
makes sense. Yeah, 3, it's like very strong.
I love the VAT system. I almost shot exclusively with that because I thought it was a really
me too.
But once you went to 4, you know, I like took the day off to play Fallout 4. I'm not even joking. I was like really, really excited, and it started really good. Like, it started strong, and I was like, hell yeah, like, this game's gonna blow me away. But I got about 30-40 hours in, I ended up beating it, and I kind of like stepped back and was like, okay, that was maybe like a 7 or an 8 out of 10 at best.
Settlements.
I didn't enjoy the base building. I hated the dude telling me another settlement needed help. Like, I hated the settlements in general. Those, like, it was a cool idea, but execution made no sense. I was excited about getting raided in 4 because you create your base and you can get raided.
Yeah.
But, like, it happened infrequently, and then if it did, it was like 2 guys, and so there was just no balance. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Or wasn't at my base, and I'm like, well, that's not really
fair. Like 5 bases,
you know, so
like 5 settlements,
a lot of
to, like,
things in
have
that
these,
game
like,
that
resources
just really didn't land well for me. Visually,
and it just,
though,
like, you're like, I don't want to play this mini game of like fucking around with all these things. So yeah, you end up not doing it. Yeah. No, you didn't need it.
Sharing. Yeah. Plus you didn't need it. You didn't really need the supplies that also, that was another thing that I remember pissing me off very early on was like, oh, I needed sheet metal, but I had already collected sheet metal in like the 3-mile radius. And so I was like, well, then what am I supposed to do? You know, so there was just like a lot of things that the base building was completely unnecessary to me. If they wanted to like give me which they do later, like give you like a castle, I'm like, okay, yeah, like I can kind of come back here.
It would have been one thing if they're like, hey, this is your base and you can do things to upgrade it in a way that was designed to be upgraded. Like, you know, very like, hey, if you upgrade this thing that's like static in the game, it'll make your weapons better or whatever, and then you can upgrade more weapons. But it's like, no. They gave you like, yeah, they almost give you too much options. And it was like, I don't like in a game that was designed for you to leave and explore and not be in your base. It was like, why would I want to be in my base when I have like the whole point of the game is to not be in my base.
To leave. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was the big thing for me too.
And
you know, so that ended up just, I mean, I'm sure with the DLCs and things that came out and the fixes, like I would be interested in going and playing it again. I mean, I'm not going to do that before I go and play New Vegas or another one, but just going into 76 a little, since we are short on time here. I played it for a little bit, you know, a few hours last weekend as well. You know, I gotta admit, like, the stuff in the vault was cool, and I liked being it, like, oh, it's Reclamation Day, like, time to leave the vault. Like, I thought that was really cool. As soon as I stepped out of the vault, I was confused, bored, like, disoriented. Like, I was, like, I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, like, am I playing a single-player game? Is this a multiplayer game? That player over there, should I be worried about him? Should I not be worried about him?
Yeah.
I was just, it, and it asked you to set up a base, like
strong.
The first thing you do. And I'm like, am I setting up a base where everyone else is setting
the
up
vision
a base?
Isn't like, strong. And just, you're so right. Like, you come out and you're just
made
like,
sense.
And like, there's no, like, you don't feel like there's any motivation to stay in this world.
I immediately wanted to walk away.
And so, like, it's something that's interesting too is it's like multiplayer, right? That's the whole thing. Is so you basically, like, when you play, you jump into a server and then it, like, has, I think it's like 24 people in a server up to, though I've never seen that many. It's like they'll put like a dozen people in one server and you can like run past them and kind of see them doing things on and whatever. But it's like, one, all the quests are single player. Even if you do were to do co-op, like if you were to come to my game or I was going to go into yours, the quest lines are only go towards the player, the primary player. So like if we did them together, even if I had the quest and we do it for you, it doesn't count towards mine. And so we'd have to do it twice, which, like, is insane. So the game feels like a single player
that was a good idea.
Experience. And then it's funny because, like, you kind of think, so there's PvP in the game. You can attack just anybody. I've never once been attacked because there's no benefit to it. You can't even steal the person's shit, I think. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But, like, I've never once ever been attacked. In fact, I've run past people all the time and they're like, hey, you want some free shit?
Wow.
Because, like, I don't know, it's just kind of like people, it's just like this single player game that you just happen to be playing next to people with, you know. There's like, I don't know,
and we're human beings. Like, you don't even need incentive to go shoot your brother. Like, yeah, like, you yeah. know, like,
and,
I played Red Dead
like,
Online. People
game,
will just
was,
shoot
like,
you for fun. So
day,
people aren't even shooting me for
so
fun. Then something
like,
must be
unoptimized
totally
for the PC, at least. It was, like, stuttering like crazy. Like, I would shoot an enemy, and then, like, it would, like, the enemy would go, boop, and, like, move over here. And I'm like, oh, God, okay. Like, it would stutter. And then I'm like, my computer can handle it. Like, I have a very, very strong PC. And people are like, oh, well, you got to go in and change this text file or, you know, download this mod. And I'm like, no, the game should work. It should just work. Anyway, so for me, my worst game is Fallout 76, like by far. That game is just utter garbage. And I keep tricking myself into thinking maybe it'll be okay this time and I'll play like an hour in it. And I'm like, no, why? Why do I keep thinking this game is going to work? But it just doesn't. And then my favorite might surprise you. I'm going to say it's Fallout 4. Because so Fallout 3 holds a special place in my heart, and I do love that game. So, like, honorary mentions to that one. But Fallout 4 does have, like, if you ignore the settlement crap, which I do, I just ignore it, the world is more interesting to me to just roam around. Now, it does have a lot of problems. Like, for instance, the settlement, the story is not that engaging, but that is made up with all of the other little side stories in the game. And the fact that, like, it does feel, it feels good to explore and to feel strong. And it does, and it's probably, I mean, even, like, the game is, like, what, like 10 years old now, almost 9, 10 years old. It's still a gorgeous game to look at. And like, I know, like, in the back of our minds, everyone's like, oh, the graphics don't matter. And it's like, that not completely true. The graphics do matter. The graphics don't have to be the most beautiful thing in the world, but you have to play within you have to design within the realm of the restrictions of your graphics. You know, if you're like a 2D game or a pixelated game or this, like, there's ways to make that work. And so for me, Fallout 3 is very hindered by its own, like, their vision was more than the graphics. Right. And so, like, going back and playing it now, I'm like, oh, man, like, I remember this being better in my head is one of those. So it didn't, like, hold up as well. But the story is better than 4. There's a lot of things in 3 that are better than 4. But I have more hours in 4, and I go back to 4 more often. And the mods make 4 very replayable. Like, I have like probably 100 gigabytes of mods in 4. And I know that, that shouldn't really affect the game. You know, like, it should just work and be good, but at the same time, it's like, I've just, you know, I've made it my own. And so, like, I really like 4. Mm-hmm.
I think 4 is one of my favorites in terms of visual exploration. So I remember you run into,
at one point you get a quest for it,
but it's funny because I found this before I had the quest. You're following the, like, forgive me, it was like the Patriot Trail or something like that. It's like some trail. Yeah, and you're like following that. And I remember seeing it and being like, this is interesting. So I started following it, and it leads you to several like things, and then there's like a boss that pops up, like a monster, and I was like, now this is great storytelling. It's a visual storytelling. It's convinced me to go explore this thing visually without having to say a word.
Yeah.
So, and then like Fallout 4, I'll just to end my thoughts here. One of my favorite moments is Fallout 4 is in the beginning, and you go and save the Minutemen guys, and then you go onto the roof, and there's that power armor for you, and you just get, and then you just like jump off of the building, and you're just like, and you hit the ground, and then you fight the Death Claw. Yeah. That's what you fight the Death Claw guy, and like that was a great moment, like really great moment.
Yeah, I also think Fallout 4 is a classic game by of any where it launched in a poor state.
My expectations were thwarted at the time.
Added updates to it, so it's kind of like hard to say. From the game now, from when it launched, and you know, like the, like I was saying, like the main storyline, it's like almost secondary in the Fallout games, and like the little stories in the Fallout 4 are really good. It's just they have trouble with the big macro story, and you know, it's probably really hard to do such a thing because you're like, well, I want to give absolute flexibility to the player, but at the same time, how do we enforce this like story? Like that's got to be a really, really hard thing to do. And so, yeah, but I mean, the Fallout games are great, and like that universe is so cool, and like I'm really excited to see. Hopefully, this Fallout TV series, you know, is clearly bringing back players to the game. I mean, they've had like a surge of players. I think Fallout 4 has hit its peak, or like record, or broke its peak concurrency, because players are like, you know, it was on sale, which of course is, you know, good marketing move. So a lot of people were buying it and playing it and jumping back in. I mean, it made me jump back in because I'm like, yeah, you know what? I do love this game and I do want to go back. So of course I downloaded Fallout 4 again and New Vegas and Fallout 76. And I was like switching between all three of them. I uninstalled Fallout 76 because I was like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I wasting my time? But yeah, I mean, Fallout's a great show. What would be the first game someone who's never played should jump into?
Great series, yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. So I would say if you don't mind older video game looks, like an older video game style, I would start with 3.
For me, I think I would have to recommend 4 first, because the thing is, if you're a new player,
to your taste, I would start with 4.
Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 are now to this point where it's kind of like the people who love Fallout play those ones. And so because they're a little aged, you know, and they do show their age. And so if you're a retro player, like Tyler said, like, yeah, go ahead and jump into those ones. But if you're just kind of like a casual player and you're like interested in Fallout, I think Fallout 4 is a great place to jump in. It's a very classic Fallout experience. It looks great. On the 25th, they are releasing a new update for Fallout 4 with modern like support. So modern PC updates and console updates. So which I don't think is going to functionally isn't going to change a lot, but I think it's just going to fix like crashes and like they're adding like widescreen support and things like that. Just like little things. So it's just going to run better. So I think Fallout 4 would be a great place to start. My recommendation, though, would be to ignore a lot of the settlement stuff, except for like the bare minimum, you know, make your workbenches and stuff like that. But yeah, and then just explore and, you know, kind of like do that. So that would be my recommendation. And avoid Fallout 76 at all costs. It's just absolutely awful.
Unless you really love it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. No, even if you enjoy it, stop playing it. You're making it look bad for the rest of us because it makes them think that we want it. All right. You got anything else?
Then have fun.
Cool. Well, then I'm going to say thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to be notified when we post new episodes. Right. Post new episodes every Tuesday morning.
Nope.
You can find us on podcast services and YouTube. You can also find us on Instagram, Threads, and YouTube at Pixelated Realms Podcast. Thank you very much.